Like Minds Podcast. I'm your host, RL Melpica.
And I'm the co-host, Chef Definition.
And we're ready for another great episode. Got a special guest all the way out from Australia, Mr. RJ Singh. How you doing today, man?
Yes, I am blessed. It's a beautiful day. It's been an early morning. Just kind of been trying to do many things in one day, multitask, not necessarily do very well at it. But yeah, I'm glad we're here together and we finally have gotten together for this, man.
For sure. For sure. You know, it was funny. When we were putting everything together, we were trying to figure out what time it was over there. So, you know, we asked Siri or whatever. So yeah. So you're morning, we're evening over here, but we're vibing on the same level right now.
Yeah. So it's 10:24 AM here.
Okay.
Whenever I do talk to people back home in the States, I make it really early for me. It's convenient for them. I prefer to do these things super early. So this is actually, this is a new time. Like, I usually don't do this during the day, but it's nice because it's, it's not the crack of dawn. So that's good.
Yeah, right. 5 in the morning or something like that.
Yeah, literally.
Well, look, man, we've looked at your website, you know, we read the bio on you and Ultra Habits. Tell us about Ultra Habits and what that's all about.
Yeah, so Ultra Habits is a culmination of my passions, my passion for business. I'm an ultra endurance athlete, so I run distances longer than a marathon.
Oh, wow.
I was a hardcore addict, in my earlier days, back in California, and through that whole transformation process, I fell in love with habits. Habits, in one way, shape, or form, I always had habits before they were just pointed in the other direction. And I guess I used my ability to stick to process before it was a bad process in addiction to kind of get me out of the darkness. So Ultra Habits is a kind of a culmination of my life's work. Really what we do is we focus on high performance within the executive space. So young cats, you know, male, female, and now everything in between that want to access kind of the systems, habits, behaviors that are required to take them to that next level. We have a real holistic approach though, mind, body, spirit, man.
Beautiful.
So you said addicted to the what?
I was addicted to everything.
No. Addicted to the process or addicted to, what was you? I didn't want to interrupt you while you were speaking, but you just kind of let off with something that was really heavy.
Yeah. So I guess, yeah. So when I was out there in the streets, mm-hmm. I always thought I was undisciplined and I had no direction. What I realized later on, once I reorientated myself to the light, to the positive, was even when I was out there on the streets, I always had a process and I had a system and I was very driven, but that was all directed to the dark, right? So I was addicted in one shape or form, and now I'm addicted to the positive, right? So habits have always been something that have ruled my life one way, shape or form, but it's about realigning those habits to the light versus the dark.
That's heavy.
What was, well, actually, let's rewind a little bit. Tell us your story, man. Like, you know, how did you get to where you are today?
So I was born in Australia and we migrated to the U.S. in 1983, you know, ethnic kind of family coming up in the San Francisco Bay Area. Dad worked his ass off. Old school dad, you know, kind of provider, but that's really it. He had his limitations. Mom was everything, you know, the kind of lifeblood of the household. And I just got caught up in the streets. And it wasn't that my family was straight. I just didn't have a strong sense of self. I went to a rough school, as you guys can probably understand. And, you know, it was chaotic. I was scared. And what I did was, instead of focusing on, you know, study, strengthening myself, I kind of, because I had no strong sense of self, I was very impressionable by peers, which led me down the wrong crowd. Influenced, I had a highly addicted, influenced, and I had a highly addicted personality. So, you know, that led me to boys' homes, detention facilities, youth homes, and basically, long story short, we're going to pack this to the degree that you want to. By the age of 25, I was a multiple convicted felon. I had a degree. I had this double life going on, but the U.S. government, I had never become a naturalized citizen. My family did, my brothers and, you know, my parents did, but because I was out there in the streets, I never bothered to go and do that. Right. And when I was 25, I had to renew my green card. It was like, ba-boom. and that was going to be problematic. And I got caught up in some other stuff. And instead of sticking around, I just left the U.S. I bought a one-way ticket to Australia. Mm. So, you know, I was 26, landed here. No real skills, couldn't cook, couldn't do anything other than hustle.
Right.
Didn't have anything. But I thought that I could start over with a blank slate. I came to learn later on that you follow you. That's, you know, geographical change doesn't mean shit when your mindset's still, you know, still where you're at.
That's a motherfucker right there. You do follow me.
You do. I mean, that's the thing. We're always looking for external influences to shift us. But ultimately, it can influence us, but the change has got to come within, right? Change of heart, change of mind. I basically had a rock bottom here in Australia. Mm-hmm. And two things happened. I knew how to get sober because I'd been through programs and all that stuff back home in the States. But the pivotal thing was, I was provided a mentor here who hired me as a sales guy, and he lived in San Francisco and he liked the American culture and he liked to teach. And we had a chat one day and I said, look, I told him my whole story. And I said, you know, I'm also a raging alcoholic. That's why you see me in the same suit 3 days in a row. I'm manic. I'm in the office crazy. Sometimes I'm up, sometimes I'm down. And I said, I'm really reaching a breaking point. I think I got to quit the job. Mm. And he told me, he said, don't do that. He said, you've got something and I can help you bring it out. I'm paraphrasing the conversation. He said, but you need to get your shit together.
Right. On.
And I'll show you how to get to success. Mm. At that very moment, I knew that this was probably the last opportunity. Here was someone that saw something in me I'd never seen in myself.
Right.
And I knew that he could help me redirect all the potential that I knew I had in the right way. And so I did two things. I decided to follow his lead and I decided to get sober.
Man.
So, and that was 10 years ago, 11 years ago.
Okay. Right on. Yeah. Right on.
That's interesting because, you know, with it kind of being a mentor or somebody else kind of helping you cross that bridge. You know what I mean? Because a lot of, and that's something to me that's not talked about enough. It's like, yeah, you have to find yourself, but it's okay to utilize resources and have help. And what I speak about all the time is make sure that your circle, the circle that you have, you know, provides value to your life. You know what I mean? If you have a toxic circle, you're going to be around toxic shit. You're going to do toxic things. Right. So for you to find that out, you know, at a job where you were probably at the point where like, you know what, I got to get away from this. But to have someone from there kind of pull you in and almost instill confidence and a certain type of energy like towards yourself. Yeah. Yeah.
Like mentorship.
Yeah. I mean, that's fascinating, man. And I think more of that needs to happen.
Definitely.
I when I reflect on my journey back at home, I had always been attracted to strong males. I ran on my own. I ran by myself, but I had always, there were always versions of Matthew back home in California. Okay, they were gotcha. Just, they were just, if I look at the men that I had come up with when I was 16, 17, I was running around with men that were 40, 45. Some could say maybe I was looking for a father figure, but these men were never doing the right things. Mm-hmm. And they were influencing me, but with toxicity,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. Shaping my views of women, shaping my views of the world. And I was letting it happen. I was welcoming it because I just wanted, I think I just needed to be steered. And when I reflect on my relationship with Matthew, he did the same thing. He just pointed me the other direction.
Yeah.
So you're 110% right. Your circle of influence is critical. It's key. So many people back there in the streets, I could have conversation. I mean, something happened the other day, we can unpack, blew my mind, but like so many people in the streets that I know I grew up with would have been dynamic CEOs, you know, but they just didn't have the opportunity to express themselves in a positive way.
Yeah, right. It's allocating that energy in a positive light as opposed to in a negative light. You know what I mean? Yeah. Which you see a lot with athletes. You know what I mean? A lot of athletes are on that. They're on that the precipice of either going down the wrong road and sports can bring them back, or if they don't attach to that, they end up going the wrong way. I mean, I see it a lot because we're both huge boxing fans. And
are you?
Yeah, yeah. Boxers, like, look, to get in the ring and to get your head pounded for whatever, you know, you gotta come from nothing. In my opinion, you gotta come from nothing. You have to have that hunger, and it's that dividing line. Like, which way do you want to utilize your energy and stay where you are and continue down that path, or do you want to utilize that same energy and those same abilities that you have in a different light to where you can make yourself a living and be a positive influence on society?
Man, not to digress, on my show, I had a boxer from Ghana. Oh, you guys got to connect with this cat. They call him Freezy Macbones. Check this out. Uh-huh. He's not.
Oh.
So wow. he basically grew up in Ghana, uh-huh, poor ass, and loved Mike Tyson, but never threw a punch. He got into the UK, to England, kind of, he's trying to get his citizenship. He got in there, you know, however he got in there. But he, because 50 Cent shared a video of it. So one day, Freezy's in a bar, and he's in his like 27, 28, never boxed. And he sees Floyd and Pacquiao or someone fighting. And he's getting pissed off. He's like, man, these guys are just dancing around, ain't hitting each other. And he told his friend, he goes, man, I could do this shit. And he goes, man, you have. Anyways, he's adapted the peekaboo system. He's 5'8", and he is knocking people out.
Wow.
And you know what? I had him on my podcast at 27. He started boxing. I said to him, I said, what motivates you, Freezy? He goes, because when I get in the ring, he goes, I'm fighting for my family to come here, right? Because his family's all poor, right? Eight brothers and sisters in Ghana still, and he's doing it though, man. You guys got to check him out. He's a chef.
Shit. You said Freezy McBones?
Freezy Macbones. So
okay. I think I've heard of him too, bro.
And he what happened was what he said was, he goes, because of his fighting style,
right?
If he doesn't knock people out, he doesn't get the points. He's an amateur. They want to see kind of you. And he says, so when he fights, his view is he has to knock you out.
Yeah, don't leave it up to
the judge. Adapted. And he's adapted Tyson style. But he's such a gentleman, so humble. His work ethic is extraordinary, and his story is phenomenal. But
that's awesome.
I think you're quite right. I think you see that in any trade or craft where there is no other opportunity, right? So right now for him, it's powerful because that's his only opportunity in his view.
Right.
Yeah, we were looking at him on a little bit of YouTube right here. Now. He is super nice, man. I mean, like, super nice.
He's aggressive. He's aggressive.
I like it.
He's aggressive. He's got style. He's got it all. I think he's trying to bait that Logan Paul into a fight.
That would be nice.
That would be interesting.
That would be really nice.
He's so pissed off. He's like, he ain't paid his dues. You know what? You know what I mean? I want to knock that motherfucker out.
Hopefully he'll get his chance. He'll get his chance.
Exactly. Well, if he keeps putting videos out like that, he probably will.
Right on.
You get a following nowadays. That's all you need, man. And you can get a fight. So that's beautiful, man. Wow, that's really interesting. Yeah, man. Well, I mean, with you, okay, so you have a podcast, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, you said you're talking about that a little bit. But you also have the 10 habits that you talk about. Can you dive into that, or is that something that they have to connect with you to get, or what?
No, of course. So I think the first point on habits is that no single habit is a game changer. I think it's the integration of all the habits and how it's relevant to your life in the flavor of what you do. For instance, waking up at 5 a.m. is not necessarily a good habit if you go into bed at 1 a.m., right? Like this context, right? So I think that it's really understanding first and foremost the context of your life, and then understanding and experimenting with different habits to see what works for you, and how it derives benefit for your life. So for me, I think there's certain things obviously that are important and can impact your life. Getting up early, you know, I've got kids, you know, before the madness, I wake up really early, like 4:30, you know, 4 a.m., 5 a.m., whatever. I do meditation, I do journaling. I might do exercise, or I might do exercise midday, just depending on the schedule. So very structured. So I set my spirit right for the day through that meditation, quiet time, journaling, reflecting. I do journaling through a stoic a stoic journal. So I'm into stoicism. And then, you know, setting my day up success. I don't eat in the morning. As a chef, you might appreciate this or not, I don't eat till 10 a.m. I fast every day.
Wow.
Kind of clear out my body. I find that as I'm getting older, it's important to have a more dynamic relationship with my intake, with my food.
Right on.
You know, like I work hard. I've got two businesses. I've got a logistics company. We're a $40 million company. That mentor I met, that company that is now my biggest competitor.
Oh, wow.
He no longer works there. He's a shareholder.
Okay.
He's doing some other stuff, but they are my biggest competitor, and we're growing, and I'm head of growth. So all the growth comes down to me, right? So, you know, I've got to manage my energy. Mm-hmm. On the podcast, in the morning, into my day. If I start getting tired, I might nap. Napping to me is an ultra habit too. 20-minute nap, don't eat the sugar, don't drink the coffee, take a nap. People don't realize how much a nap, just 20 minutes, man.
Say 20 minutes?
Give you that second wind. 20 minutes power nap.
Okay.
When you start to feel like you're fading around noon, one, most people reach for the coffee or the chocolate, take a nap. You know, and then you back on, you know, and so managing that whole business aspect and what I do during the day, and then getting home every night by dinner, you know, because I've got my wife, got two kids, 4 years old, 15 months old, and then basically doing the nighttime routine with them, being present, reading to them, and then after that, putting them to bed and just winding down the day, you know, so I'm quite structured in my day. Things come up, but I've got, I would say this, through strong habits and rituals and systems, what will start to happen is your day doesn't run you. You manage your day.
I like it.
I like that.
And I think you come from a place of power and position versus being kind of pushed around by your day and the contents of your life, right?
Yep.
So like to keep your energy level up, like, you know what I'm saying, what kind of foods do you eat?
That's a good question. I mean, I eat pretty basic, man. So, you know, like I eat fruit. Mm-hmm. At 10 a.m. right before our conversation, I had some nuts. I had an orange. I'll have a banana at lunch. I'll eat tuna with some rice or maybe some wholemeal bread. I'll have some fruit. You know, I eat pretty clean. What I don't do is spike my energy levels and manipulate my energy levels throughout the day. I try not to with excess sugar or coffee. Because coffee, I can use it as crack. And, you know, I'll try to put that shit in my neck. You know, like, it doesn't work after a while, right? Like, you can't.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so, you know, so I think I'm very conscious of my energy levels.
That's big.
Very
that statement right there, yeah, conscious of it, yeah, because most people, they don't attach it to anything. They just think that they don't put a reason behind it. They don't go to the root of the issue. They're just like, oh, you know what? I'm tired right now. Let me go drink a cup of coffee. Let me get a soda or some shit like that. Right. Not understanding, well, why am I tired? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And attacking that aspect instead of trying to find some type of quick fix remedy that's only going to fuck them up in the long run. You know what I'm saying?
Especially back home in the United States, man. We got obesity and issues and drama like that here in Australia. But the American culture is one where commerce rules, and you know the community is being pushed fucking shit food at school. You know, like there's a host of issues that I now see as someone that's removed myself from the United States ecosystem. And it takes a lot of consciousness and awareness. And we need to realize that as soon as we wake up, if you had a good night of sleep, your body is going to move towards fatigue. And that's a natural state of affairs. And it's not necessarily about fighting that, it's working with that. And again, that's why I refer to the nap, the 20-minute nap. Especially when I was training for ultra marathons, you got to think like ultra marathon, I might run 25 kilometers at 6 a.m. That's before a whole work day.
Wow.
Right. Wow. Like that's a lot of running. So by 9 a.m. I'm rooted. Right. Like I'm really fucking tired.
Right.
And start getting, you know, you get paranoid, like start to see the world when you're that tired. As a chef, you might not need, so you know, that tired, start to see, like, what did you say? You know, that kind of shit.
Right. You're talking shit.
So, like, you know, because you start to, it's like, you know, so like 9:30, 10 a.m., you got to take a nap.
Yeah.
You know, or what I'm going to do, drink coffee. Not the coffee, none of that's going to work. So, you just have to become acutely aware of your state,
For sure. That's all. That's conscious. I mean, that's what being conscious is. It's not just, you know, it's not just a spiritual thing. It's your everyday life, being conscious of all the choices and decisions that you make, especially nowadays with what's going on in the world. Hell, you know, being conscious of everything that's going on, and being able to step outside and ask yourself those important questions, as opposed to just going along with what's being told to you or what the norm is. You brought up journaling, which I think was really interesting, because that's when I talk to people and I, you know, work with people on the coaching level. I talk about mindful habits, right, and behaviors. And one of those is journaling, because I know we all think we're going to remember everything. We're not. So if you're trying to make a change in your life from a dietary standpoint, or you're trying to figure out what's wrong with you, you know, you have a certain ailment or something along those lines, then journaling is the key. So let me ask you, what kind of dive deeper into your journaling. What do you use it for? You know, what does it look like? And what would you tell everybody out there about journaling?
Yeah. So good question. And I really agree with you on that. So I think when we get it out of our mind and into paper or whatever, it becomes real. And it becomes, there's a level of accountability because it's just not theoretical. When I got into creating inventories was in when I got sober. I got sober through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what we do in there is we use inventories to ask ourselves at the end of every day to reflect, and it asks specific questions. Where are we selfish? Where are we dishonest? Where are we self-seeking? What could we have done better? It's reflective-based questions. So that was my first exposure to journaling. Do I owe an amends to anyone? Right? So it gets you to start to own your shit and really help you see how you travel versus how you think you travel. Some of us think we move in a state of grace when we got sharp edges. You know what I mean? Like,
we're brash and shit.
You know what I'm saying? No, I'm super mindful, man.
Right.
You're chaotic. You know what I mean?
Right, right. Like shit be everywhere. Choo, 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 like a motherfucker.
And so what I do now, though, my journaling is a bit different. I do some journaling out of a Stoic. So Stoicism was a form of philosophy that was used by kind of the ancient Greeks and Roman elite generals and stuff. And what I get out of the journaling that I do through that forum is it asks you specific questions, and it asks you questions that make you reflect on your conduct or how you're being. So I'm a spiritual person, but I'm more interested in how that spirituality translates into real and tangible ways of being beneficial to not only myself, but others around me. So I'm not religious in the sense that I have a faith that makes me feel at ease right. and comfort, because right. for me, that's it, that to me, it doesn't impact and it doesn't actually help me or others in a meaningful way.
Right.
So I'm right. what they call an existentialist. I want to engage in spirituality to change the way that I actually interface with the world. And therefore my journaling asks me questions like, what are you a slave to? Or what would life look like if you didn't object to anyone today? Or it gets you to reflect on questions about your conduct.
Interesting.
Right? So, I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
I think it's fair. I mean, I think it's interesting in a positive light, because I've, you know, journaling for me has always been just pouring my thoughts out, or, you know, making recordings of what I'm doing, you know, for a purpose. But with what you're talking about, with the accountability aspect, it just makes you think. It kind of keeps you on track as far as your line of, like you said, spirituality, you know, holding yourself accountable to, okay, yeah, what am I a slave to today? Am I a slave to the TV? Am I a slave to food? Am I a slave to my job? Whatever the case may be, it's always keeping you like aware of everything that's going on. And I think that's a big thing, because we, as you know, depending on where everybody is on their journey, we get lost sometimes. Sometimes we stray off that journey. And sometimes we need simple forms of accountability to keep us on track, because we get lost a little bit. You know, let's say a mile off track turns into 3 miles, turns into 5 miles, and all of a sudden, you know, we got no signal and we got no way to, you know, we're off the grid somewhere. You know what I mean? So something like that, I think, is very interesting, because it's something I never even really thought of. So hearing it is like, that makes me excited. You know what I'm saying?
No, for sure. I think my definition of spirituality has changed over time as well. Like for me, I believe that a spiritual person, or person that I would define a spiritual person, as someone that carries light into the world and shifts their environment, and versus someone that might be a devout in their religious practice, or they might be at peace internally,
right,
but there's no manifestation of that yep. into the world, yeah. right? So I'm a big believer that my conduct shifts my psychology, not the other way around. I'm a big believer that my conduct shifts my spirit, not the other way around.
That's deep too.
So I act myself into a spiritual mind frame. Therefore, that then shifts my psychology. Action is my salvation.
that's what's up, man. You know, I'm sure you've heard of it, but have you heard the term of light work before?
No.
Okay. So, well, a light worker basically is everything you just said. It is, you know, it's somebody who does deeds for the betterment of humanity. Like, they share their light with the world. They share their light with their environment. And it's a beautiful thing. Like, I consider myself a light worker.
I know you do. You're the first time I heard the term was when you used it.
Yeah.
When I threw the intro, like I did, but I never had heard it or knew what it wise.
Yeah, yeah. But like I said, what you just described is exactly that. It's light work. You know, it's being a light worker, spreading your light to the world, to your community, to the world, for the betterment of humanity. So that's a beautiful thing. Yeah. So spirituality has so many different layers. And it can only be defined by the individual. There's no, you know, there's no one that can tell you what spirituality is. My spirituality is going to be different than Deshaun's. It's going to be different than yours, RJ. So just kind of is what, and that's the beauty of it. You know, we all go, we're all on a journey, but everybody's journey is different because we all have different experiences. We all have different energy. We all have different paths. We all have different past lives. You know, we're just different individuals. So that's just kind of where it is. And that's what's beauty, because we're all unique. So we're all different, but at the same time, we're all together. We're all connected. Like,
I agree.
Stardust.
I agree.
Stardust, yes, for sure.
Yeah, we're Stardust.
See, you guys are in Texas then?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, we are in
Texas. What got you guys to want to do this in terms of...
That's a good question.
Where did that come from?
Honestly, I mean, me and him, you know, we're best friends. We've known each other for over two decades, and we've always had deep, thought-provoking conversations. Not always on the same side of every conversation.
Right, right.
So, you know.
I mean, but we've been on this journey, like you say, we've been on this journey for like 20-plus years now. So, you know what I'm saying? And it all kind of started with trying to find the truth, you know what I'm saying, or fucking variations of the truth, and found out that it's not the truth, it's a motherfucker's truth, and you speak your truth and I speak my, fuck all that. You know, the truth is the truth. It don't need no motherfucking spokesperson and shit. So we just been on this journey. We looking for the truth and we trying to find, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm fucked up. You know what I'm saying? I've been fucked up for a long time. So I'm trying to find the ways to unfuck myself. You dig what I'm saying? And so this podcast has been extremely therapeutic.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
It is.
Because talking to you, like this is some most interesting shit. You know what I'm saying? Not like saying it's shit, but like this is like mind changing shit. You feel me? And it's like, okay, I want to hear so much more of it. You feel what I'm saying? So I'm very intrigued and shit like a motherfucker.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we first started this just to do it, like we talked about. We'd have these conversations. Oh, why don't we just have a podcast? And then what happened was it kind of had an energy of its own.
Mm-hmm.
And the energy of its own kind of took it to where it is now. And now, like he said, having great examples, having someone like you on, like we're super intrigued by the conversation. Mm-hmm. And then we're spreading that out with our light. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. For more people, like-minded people like us, that are just going to be, you know, sparked and interested as well. And they're going to tell their friend. And that's the beauty of this whole thing, is that when people like us connect, it's not just a one-on-one conversation. Like, this conversation has impact, you know, layers and layers and layers of impact.
Yeah. So we want to heal. We want to help people heal. We want to help people get to a place where they can heal and, you know, touch on their traumas, you know what I'm saying? Whether it's childhood trauma, adult trauma, or whatever. But
Past life trauma.
Yeah, past life trauma. But find that shit and find out what the fuck is going on with you. You know what I'm saying? Deep internally, like you say, you know. So we want to be able to put people on the right direction, you know, to find, you know, what's kind of fucking with them, or what's the right path to go down.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question? Because I'm interested to know. How is your conversation, and how do you find your conversations received among the kind of African American community?
Me personally,
it's a great question.
That is a great question. Because
I don't have any political. I'm happy to. I've had these conversations.
I mean,
you answer that question. I'm going to give you context as to why I asked that question. Okay, so you answer that question.
I don't like
like I don't like being the spokesperson for speaking of for African Americans because I don't feel like my mental is, I don't want to say trapped in that mind state, but I've opened my mind to where I'm willing to learn new things. I'm willing to be exposed to new things, opposed to having, well, this is my culture. This is how I was raised. This is why I do this bullshit right here. You dig what I'm saying? So I'm always constantly learning, and I learn from different cultures. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm attracted to learning, especially cooking wise, being a chef. But it's also their culture and their upbringing and what makes them tick, which kind of, you know what I'm saying, that I want to know more.
And I mean, as far, and I, let me piggyback off what he said, is the topics that we have throughout, you know, throughout our seasons on this podcast, some have resonated with, you know, the people of color culture, and some have not. But we look at things from a humanistic standpoint as opposed to trying to appease, you know, this, that, and the other.
This,
you
know, crowd.
Yeah,
this
we're, crowd. We're about spreading love. We are, you know, it's about love. We're all, you know, we're all humanitarians at the end of the day. And
I was like, I'm pro-black. I'm pro-black as a motherfucker, but I'm also pro-love as well. I'm anti-hate. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I don't have any room in my heart. I was never raised to hate anyone. So I was always raised to love people. The world taught me how to hate, not my parents and not my family. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And we've had some very deep social conversations on here. I mean, especially when the whole George Floyd situation, I don't know how much media you guys got over there for that whole situation last year. And you know, we've had conversations about, you know, the also looking up systemic racism, you know, indoctrination, religious indoctrination,
white supremacy,
all kinds of conversations about that on here, and he's a wealth of knowledge when it comes to that stuff.
You know,
but it is interesting to see, you know, how different cultures have just been programmed and conditioned through tradition. You know what I'm saying? To look at a lot of these topics. You know what I mean? Like mental health, for instance, people of color look at mental health as a weakness, and there's a stigma attached to it, you know, and we're big. I mean, that's one of our main staples, is talking about mental health and making sure it gets out in the community, for all colors, all races, all creeds, all, you know, whatever the case may be.
Make it okay to speak about mental health and not really give a fuck about the backlash, the ridicule that usually comes with speaking on mental health or speaking on how you feel as a person, and not being bombarded with ignorance and ridicule and
judgment,
and shit that makes it hard for motherfuckers to come out and talk about it, because who wants to get fucking ridiculed? You know what I'm saying? Or who wants to get bashed? Or who wants to get shamed? Or labeled. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, yeah.
The reason I asked you that question is when I go back home to California, it's really weird being in Australia for so long, seeing how my whole kind of cultural flavor has changed since being here. And so it's really interesting when I come back to Australia or to the US to see hood culture and to be around hood culture. And I actually think that hood culture and the trappings and the mechanisms and of what make up hood culture is one of the biggest threats to the ethnic community. And I'm seeing that more when I leave. And it comes down to concepts like you're talking about. Mental health would be looked at as a weakness. You can talk about that to everyone, right? There's certain things within the street culture that I think keeps our communities marginalized back home in the US.
It's definitely by design.
where key, but what ends up happening is we end up the communities caught within those ecosystems unwittingly and unknowingly propel it.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Perpetuating stereotypes.
Yeah. Correct. And like this whole piece, I remember back in the day when I lived in California. I grew up not too far from Oakland.
Okay.
And you know, right. So just to give context. Yeah. So they were talking about Ebonics and like making it a language, right?
What time were you in the Oakland area?
I grew up in that whole area.
Oh, okay.
I left in 2008 or 2007. Okay, right.
Okay. Right? I remember that Ebonics thing was really big in Oakland. Well, I was stationed out there.
Oh, you were? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was and I remember thinking, well, that's cool. Everyone I know and kind of grow up with, we all kind of talk like, and then I realized later on as an adult, like you're trying to create a system, a language that's going to lock people into fucking pop. Like I can't take that to fucking downtown San Francisco and go into an interview with a white dude. He's going to be like, whoa, right. Like that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
like,
right,
so
yeah. Right,
so right. I think that system induced, but what happens is it locks us into this mindset. Yep. And when I go home, I can see it now, man. I can see it clearly. Mm. And I think that what you guys are doing, the conversations you're having is great. Because whether you're saying, I know you said it before, Shep, that, you know, you don't want to be a spokesman,
right.
But you are, you being a power of example, that it's okay to talk about this shit.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And that's courage, man.
Right on.
That's courage.
Right on.
You know, in Australia, we have something called tall poppy. And I realize it exists back in at home. Tall poppy is this culture within Australia. They say that whenever you try to do something great here in Australia, there's a culture to bring people down. It's like, look at that guy. He's trying to big note himself.
Right.
Right. Right. He's trying to do something. But I realized that's actually indoctrinated in hood culture too.
Yeah, absolutely.
As you try to do so, oh, look at, he's Uncle Tom, that motherfucker. He's trying to, you know, like, right. Right?
Yeah.
And it actually keeps the community down.
Yeah.
We have discussions about that a lot. Yeah.
That would lack of education and lack of knowledge of self, and they tend to fall into those stereotypes, fall into those traps, those ruts, and it does create a crab in the barrel kind of syndrome and shit like
yes.
that.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly right.
And the whole
one.
Keeping it real. I mean, I know that's a little old school, but you know, nah, I'm not doing it. I'm keeping it real.
Right,
what the fuck does that mean? Keeping it real.
Right.
You're keeping it low income, low class, poverty. I mean, is that what that means? I mean, you don't want to level up. Yeah. You don't want to elevate. You just want to keep it real and stay at the bottom.
It's that hood shit culture too. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's you know, but it was introduced by design. It was obviously perpetuated and continued to be pushed forward by the people themselves. You know what I'm saying? Unfortunately, but that was part of the design. You know what I mean? Mm. Because it's all, look, everything in life is about belief in yourself and self-confidence, right? Obviously things happen, right? We all go through experiences. But if you're born in an area, a impoverished area, you know, which it sounds like all three of us came from, right?
Humble beginnings.
Humble beginnings. That's a great way to put it. And you never receive that belief. You're never told that belief. Maybe your family's never made it out. You know, no one has ever sparked the idea that, you know what, maybe I can get beyond this. Well, then you fall victim to your environment and then you keep it real. And then you, you know, basically can get comfortable with your reality and never realize that you can actually do something with your life. You can actually get beyond this and beyond what the system has basically created for you, instead of trying to create something for yourself. Like there's power in manifestation. You know what I'm saying? And that's what we want. That's the one thing we try to profess just as much as anything else, is that there's powerful manifestation. Once you look within and you realize the power that you have yourself, you can do anything. You can absolutely do anything. And right. in that process, you're going to find yourself. You might have a goal and it might be one thing, but I tell you this, throughout that process, that goal might change because you start to realize who you truly are.
Right. Right.
Yes, I completely agree. I think that there is someone else that you should be talking to as well. There's a guy from Austin, Texas. Oh, yeah. His name's JT McCormick. He's half black and half white. And he grew up, his dad was a pimp. And he grew up on the road with his dad. And he's now a CEO of a publishing company called Scribe. And he has a really unique view and experience on this. Like, he's written a book, and in the tagline's like, I got successful, but not by being a football player, a rapper, or whatever the kind of traditional. The stereotype.
What's that Biggie line? I don't know.
Yeah, right.
You either got to jump shot or you slang your crack rap or something.
It's all about changing the pathways and the narratives, and I think it's being done. You know, like I came across an African American on the Tom Bilyeu podcast. He's like a whiz on. In kind of the stock market, and he's teaching African Americans in the kind of in an ethnic community about investing. Well, yes. You can buy Nike shoes and get one pair of shoes, or you can invest that money in the stock and let them buy you the shoes for you. You know what
right,
I mean?
Like, right. Yes, man.
Like flipping the script, right? Like trying to educate. Sure. And I think that's it's happening more. It's happening more. I grew up with a kid named Apollo, and he African American back in California. He's written a book as well, and we were probably the worst in our crew. And he ended up being diagnosed with schizophrenia, and somehow in his 20s, he transformed himself. He went to UC Berkeley, he went to Texas A&M. He's got a PhD, and he's one of the top programmers in the Silicon Valley.
Oh, wow.
He's African American, and I keep saying Apollo, he's a bit shy. And I'm like, Apollo, you need Silicon Valley's right across the water from Oakland. Yet the African American ethnic community, not so much the ethnic community, but the African American community is so underrepresented in the Silicon Valley. Man. Why?
Definitely. Yeah.
Oh. Definitely.
You need to be going out there and focusing. And he's, you know, like he doesn't want to be the voice of the community. But I think that it's important that once you see the light, like you guys have to take that light back to the communities, you said, of being a light worker.
Right.
And spreading that knowledge, man.
It's important. I mean, it's important because, you know, he's a representation of possibilities, because there's not a lot of those. Most of the representation of possibilities in urban areas are athletes and drug dealers.
Well,
yeah, and musicians.
Those are the ones that carry the biggest bag of influence.
Right. And we live in a culture of idol worship, number one.
That's it.
Yeah, so
definitely do.
I mean, that adds to it as well. And that is by design as well. But no, I mean, everything you're saying is truth, man. I do have to ask you, though, being in Australia, what's it like there right now in society? Because we know the media and their narratives and what we see online and everything. So you actually living there, I'd love to hear your perspective on what's going on, you know, with all the COVID shit going on. Because the perception over here is that Australia is like on super lockdown, mandated, almost damn near martial law over there.
Well, it's a very different system to the US. So first of all, we are on lockdown. And we're on lockdown with numbers that you guys would laugh at. Like I just moved from one state to the other, could barely get here because states have the right to lock down the states and the federal government doesn't have a lot of influence and power. In the United States, if you start trying to like lock down states and stop people from going, they pull out their pistols and start like taking over the government. Like, you know, like that shit's not gonna happen. Like, so what happens here is there's a lot more control with the government and a lot less protest in the inherent DNA and culture of the Australians. They whinge and they'll bitch a lot, but ultimately it's kind of a laid-back culture that just like, fuck it, and they'll kind of submit. Where in the U.S., you start doing shit like that, the militia movement's going to come out real quickly, right? Like, right. You see, we told you they're trying to take our rights. So yeah. You know what I mean? Like, so, and probably the U.S. is more commerce-focused. They're willing to keep things open because business. Whereas here, states have locked down the premiers, which is the equivalent of the governors. They're kind of, it's a pissing contest to see whose states kind of have the lowest numbers. So there are lockdowns. Some people think that they're a bit extreme. Some people don't. I'm in an industry that's considered critical. So in logistics, I'm moving freight and warehousing and all that. So I still come into the office. But it is on lockdown. But the numbers are low. We've got a population of 25 million people, right? I think the worst state right now is a state I moved from, which is New South Wales, where Sydney is. I think there's maybe 700 people that have it.
700 people?
They may have it.
That have it.
Oh, they
and,
have
and
it.
Here's the, and here's the go. Like, there's a lot of Australians that whinge and complain. And there was a lot of sentiment coming from Australians that, look, it's not that bad. What they don't see is the buckets and rows of dead people that maybe you see in the U.S. in the morgues or in the Philippines. Like, you know, a lot of people here are like, it's, you know, COVID, you know. So there's varying views, but we are locked down. But in a broader sense, Australia to me is like not too dissimilar from America. I think in a way, many ways, it's a much better run society, but I think it's because it's smaller and it's easier to manage 24 million people, isn't it?
Yeah. Compared to 600 million.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. I think America's an interesting place once you step out of the bubble, man.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah.
You know, it's a weird culture of kind of this political correctness, ultra-Christian conservative influence, but extremely the other way too, in many weird ways. Like, you know, and then this kind of continued polarization of views, which was brought on by our favorite politician, Donnie, right? So inflamed by him. Maybe he was already there. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, but
in my travels in the military, I traveled over to Australia like twice.
Did you?
Uh-huh. And I went to Perth, right?
Yeah.
So, well, first off, I mean, I had a great time both times I was there. And we also went to Hobart, Tasmania.
Yep.
And so,
not far from me.
Right, right. But like Hobart, Tasmania was like, it was almost like going back in time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Because
and they say that Hobart, Tasmania is like 10 years behind the mainland. And like Perth is like 7 years behind the mainland. And the mainland is like supposed to be like 5 years behind America, some shit like that. Have you ever heard anything like that?
I wouldn't disagree. I would say Perth is probably in line with the mainland because there's a lot of mining in Perth. There's a lot of money on the West Coast. Hobart, Tasmania. Hobart is a smaller city in a smaller state off of the mainland of Australia. So it is a bit slower. Mm-hmm. But you got to remember, with the proliferation of technology and probably since you left the military, the world has become a much smaller place. Mm-hmm. So ideas have spread quicker, technologies. I mean, but Australia is still the kind of place where, you know, the shops will close early on the weekends. It's English in that way. There's a lot of to be honest, there's probably not a perfect place I could have landed from the U.S. I got lucky that I was born here.
I really enjoyed myself when I was there, you know, because like one of their mottos was like, you know, work hard and then we play hard as well.
They have a great time, man. Yeah. They still do that.
Yeah, I had a great time in Australia and Singapore, are two of my most favorite places I've ever traveled. You know what I'm saying?
There you go.
And like we went to, because like when we get off the ship, man, it'll be about, you know, 10, 12 brothers and shit, a couple white cats, a few Asians. No, not too many Mexicans, though. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, but like...
Yeah, so they call people from Melbourne Mexican, so
right, anyway. Right. So we have this, like, you know, we have this, you know, this colorful crew, and we just go out and we go mob into the city, but we like to go, you know, kind of like more so to the street side, or, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. We like to go where they say they tell us not to go. That's mm-hmm. that's the first place we're going, where we're going to get some alcohol first. So I went out to the bush in Perth. We met these chicks. And they took us out to the bush, and it was like some shit I've never seen before, like out of a movie, where it's like a lot of desert, and there's some dried up plants and shit, and it's like a road. And then we ended up at this house, and we were like 30 minutes away from the town or whatever. And they were like, oh, yeah, well, you know, we could just, we can order some weed. And I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, we can, you know, call somebody up, and they'll deliver it in about 30 minutes. And I'm like, this is like in the fucking 90s and shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, and we sitting there, and she pulled out this baby bottle bong that she had made and shit. Man, I'm talking about we got high as motherfucking giraffe. You know what I'm saying? Like, in fucking Perth, Australia, in the bush with these Aboriginal chicks. You know what I'm saying?
What's that? Crazy.
With some Aboriginal chicks.
That makes it even more interesting.
Because they embraced us at this local bar, you know, they kind of took us around the town and took us home, and yeah, they were really embracing us.
I've had major Aboriginal influence in my getting sober in terms of one of my first mentors that helped me, that had been gotten sober himself, was Aboriginal. This dude, he started painting in a rehab and started selling those paintings for lots of money.
Right.
You know, he became like, when I met him, I thought to myself, he reminded me of someone back home, just someone in the African American community. I connected with him. He would take me to clubs and he'd be sober and he'd pick up all the girls, and I'd be like, how does he do that sober? But he showed me it could be done, right? Mm-hmm. He had a Lamborghini, Sicuri One. Sure, like, he was doing it. Like, yeah, oh, yeah. Like, he did, yeah. Like, but he showed me where I identified with his story, and therefore I identified with the fact that I could go where he was going. But to that point, I did meet I know the Aboriginal community quite well, and they do look up to the African American community too, because the struggle is the same. You know,
it's very
there's Aboriginal. It's almost like a mix between American Indian struggle and African American struggle, because they're indigenous here and they're on reservations. That if you go to some places in remote parts of Australia, you know, in the cities, we like to think that we're pretty multicultural, but in a lot of these communities, there's curfews. They can't buy alcohol because I don't know what your view is on the theory, but like indigenous cultures were exposed to alcohol very late. That's what they say, you know, the American Indians and the indigenous communities have been decimated by alcoholism because they didn't have the chromosomes to break down the alcohol. Whether or not that's true or not, I don't know. But a lot of these communities are like reservations. And so they look, and there's been a lot of deaths in police holding cells, like a lot of Aboriginals. And so the Black Lives Matter movement in the United States is now caught hold here in the Aboriginal community. So if you came from the U.S., they'd be like, what's up? You know, you definitely get that, man. So anyways, I knew an Aboriginal rapper here that flew out the Outlaws. Do you remember the Outlaws? He flew out the Outlaws, and they had a rap video. They did it in a strip club.
Anyway. Hey, of course.
Hey.
Nice. Oh, man. Well, RJ, go ahead and plug everything, man. Let everyone know how they can contact you, where they can listen to your podcast, website, all that good stuff, man.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Appreciate your time. I appreciate your honesty. I appreciate you guys for being you.
Thank you.
So the website has everything, www.ultrahabits.co. I'm actually mainly on LinkedIn, which is like the professional social media, professional Instagram. I'm on Instagram at Ultra Habits, but everything in terms of the show, everything is on ultrahabits.co.
Perfect. Yeah. Awesome.
You'll find everything there. You'll find me there. And just reach out. Always happy.
What's that?
Even more so happy to connect with my American community.
Right on.
I do miss the state. So,
yeah. Hey, man, if you're ever in Texas, hit us up, man.
Yeah, well, look, my brother's in Arizona now.
Okay.
So not too far from him, and my other cousin's in Utah. So you never know.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, dope, man. We appreciate having you on. Great conversation. And hey, man, we'd love to have you on again sometime in the future, man.
Thank you so very
much. Thanks, brother.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
We're out of here. Episode 2 of season 3. I'm your host, RL Mel Pika.
Chef Definition.
And make sure you check out the podcast on all streaming platforms and the new streaming platform, Akasha Flix, coming soon.
Hell yeah.
Peace.
Peace.